Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to a very special call for Jaguars season ticket members, Jaguars 365 members, with Dave Caldwell, the Jaguars general manager. I'm Brian Sexton, and I'm your moderator this evening. And just to give you a little bit of housekeeping, we have put out a clarion call for this evening for questions for Dave, and we have compiled them, gone through them, and picked the best 20 or 25. And of course, with Dave, it'll be a vibrant conversation with lots of different ways to go. So sit back and enjoy your special half hour with Jaguars general manager Dave Caldwell. And with that, let's introduce you to the general manager. Dave, how are you tonight?
Great, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's been a busy week for you. You've been on the road this week, huh?
I have. I took advantage of the bye week and some time without a game, and went out and did some college scouting. And I just literally got off the airplane.
You know, you've done that for so long, and now in your role as general manager, is that something that you enjoy, getting the chance to get back out there on the road and do what you've always done?
Yeah, it's very productive from a scouting standpoint to be able to go out and be able to look at players up close and watch them practice and go through their drills. But not only that, but you can really focus on them where there's not a whole lot else going on. As you know, being in the office on a daily basis, things can pop up between coaches, scouts, logistics, equipment guys, trainers, that sometimes it detracts you from the evaluation process.
Who'd you see that you liked? Give us a tidbit. Who is out there that looks really good?
Well, I was out there at USC and UCLA, so I did a little West Coast swing, and there are some very good players, some talented defensive players, some playmakers on offense, and some of them are, of course, underclassmen. So we're not obliged to say their names out loud, and
right.
But it was good to see those guys up and personal.
Before we jump into 2014, let me ask you, you have a unique perspective on what's going on in Western New York this week. Being a guy from Buffalo, tell me, have you ever seen snow like that before?
Well, I've seen a lot of snow and growing up there, and I just got the phone with a good friend of mine when I got off the plane, and we've seen a lot of snowstorms and have been a part of it. And when I first saw the snow, I was out in L.A., and it was sunny, and I was out of practice, and I was like, wow, I don't think I'd want to go back there right now. but it's slowly turning into a little bit, it's a little bit disturbing, because in talking to some of my family that's there and some good friends, that it's something they've never seen before. And for them to say that, it's a significant amount of snow, and you just hope that it passes quickly and that when it melts, there's no flooding issues.
All right, Dave, so we know that that you spent some time on the road this week, but Gus and the coaches talked a lot about self-scouting and self-analysis last week. Did you do any of that sort of work with your staff? And if you did, you know, what are your thoughts 10 games in?
Yeah, we do it on a weekly basis. We watch every practice. We watch every game on a Monday. And so we have a running log and just going back. And then sometimes on the plane ride out to L.A. on Monday, I was able to go back and look at some of our first couple games, too, and just see how guys progressed and refresh on what we were like in the beginning of the season as opposed to this last game against Dallas, which, you know, kind of left a bitter taste in our mouth. And you just see the progression of the players and the development that some of these young players are actually coming along and doing a nice job. And unfortunately, the record doesn't show it, but a lot of development that the coaches have done with our players and the players themselves and getting better has shown over the course of the 10 games.
You know, it seems, especially over the last month or so, Dave, that you look at this football team and you can pick out five or six things that go well and two or three things that keep it from going really well. Is that part of the progression with this team, to learn to put all those different pieces together?
Well, I think and a lot of discussions I've had with Coach Bradley last week in the off week, and just looking at our whole season as a whole, is it really comes down to us is as simple as turnovers. And, you know, there's been many instances in games where we've been moving the ball, we're in a red zone, and then whether it's a fumble or an interception or, you know, a block kick, and which we consider a turnover, those are things that really have set us back. You see a better brand of football up until those happen, and those are just some of the things that happen. They happen in bunches, and they happen in bunches when we're on defense too. So we just got to clean that up and really protect the ball here in these last six games, and then I think you're going to see the outcomes be a lot better.
You know, Red Bryant told me in A Few Good Minutes this week, which is up on the site now for folks to look at, I thought he really made a great point. He said, I see everything we need except the know-how. And do you see it the same way, and do you see a team that's close to knowing how to close out some of these games?
Yeah, I do believe that. And, you know, we're the youngest team in the NFL, and that's not an excuse, but not only by age, but by playtime participation. We have close to 50 rookie starts this year, and our age is young. But I just think, you know, a lot of these guys were just seniors in college last year, and some of them should be still seniors in college. And
right.
You think about a guy like Luke Jokel, who's really in his second year, but should really be a fifth-year senior at Texas A&M. And I think Jerry Sullivan summed it up really well when we played the Cincinnati Bengals, and it really kind of took me back when he said Terrence Newman was covering Allen Robinson. And he said, you see that guy right there? And Allen said, yeah. And he said, you were in kindergarten when that guy was a rookie in the league. And so you think about that experience and some of those things that are really true. But they're really coming along nicely, and I think that Red, I probably hit the nail on the head. We have a lot of things that we need. We just have to do it consistently and finish it.
As you can imagine, a lot of the questions that we got from our season ticket members were focused on your young quarterback, Blake Bortles. So, you know, knowing that you had planned to give him some time to watch and try to, you know, to figure out where he's at, is he where you thought he could be at this point of the season?
I think so. Yeah. And actually, the last couple of weeks have really been encouraging for me, because when Blake first started playing this year, you know, he did some really nice things in those first 3 weeks, minus the interceptions that he had. And then he went through a little bit of lull in that Cleveland and Miami game, where he kind of didn't play his best football. But that happens with young quarterbacks. This is the first time that defensive coordinators across the league are seeing him play in a real game setting. So it took him like 3 games to catch up with what Blake was doing. Now it's Blake's time to catch up with what the defensive coordinators are doing. And you've seen that the last couple of games, where he's kind of steadied it a little bit. And there's a little bit of slight improvement each week. So hopefully that continues. He's still going to have adversity. He's still, you know, I watch some veteran quarterbacks that have been in the league that have won Super Bowls, that I'm watching games last Sunday on the bye week, and they're throwing 3-4 interceptions a game. And it's just, you know, not that, but when we kind of live in, like I live in a fishbowl, and we overanalyze things. But at the end of the day, he's going to make mistakes. Every player does. It's just magnifying with the quarterback position. But he's done a really nice job of really kind of studying it, and I hopefully that this week off gave him a little bit of clarity and some chance to kind of energize himself and move forward.
You know, as you look at him and his progress, and you've seen, in case folks have forgotten, you saw a young Kerry Collins in Carolina, a young Peyton Manning in Indianapolis, and a young Matt Ryan in Atlanta. Are all of them different, or can you put some benchmarks in where it starts to turn for a lot of these guys?
I think they're all different. They've all come in different situations. Kerry Collins was on an expansion team, and you know, he spent 5 years at Penn State, came out. Peyton spent 5 years at Tennessee, and you know, our first year there in Indianapolis, we had Marshall Faulk, Marvin Harrison, Tarik Glenn, Kent Dilger, Marcus Pollard. So we had some talent there, you know, and we still went 3-13. And then Matt Ryan's rookie year is, you know, same thing. We had Michael Turner. We had quite a bit of talent. But Matt spent 5 years at Boston College. You know, Blake only spent 4 years at Central Florida. Those three guys actually played in pro-style offenses, too, coming out of college. Blake played in a little bit of a non-traditional offense. And so I think his ceiling is very high, and I think he's working to get to where he needs to be.
Guys like me in the media, and a lot of the folks who are listening to this call, you know, we tend to oversimplify it. You know, we know this is a work in progress, and we know he's a rookie quarterback.
You say oversimplify, so I would say you guys would overanalyze.
Okay. I like to take the high road, but you're probably right. We probably do overanalyze. So tell me this. When you look at it, Dave, that's a fair comment. When you look at it, we say if the Jaguars know at the end of the year that this is their guy, this year was an absolute success. Is that overanalyzing it? I mean, how much of the overall evaluation of your team in this quarterback-important league is based on Blake this year?
I wouldn't put everything into this year. I think we're pretty confident that he is our guy, and regardless of what happens in the next six games, we got to do everything in our power to build this team around him and give him a chance to succeed. And in doing that, it's just not offensively, but one of the best things we could do for Blake Bortles is help our defense and bring in more players, whether it be through the draft or through free agency, to come in and compete. And then on offensive side of the ball, where we have some holes, bring those guys in either through the draft or through agency and build this where it's not just about Blake Bortles. This is a team concept and this is a team game where he doesn't have to win games on himself by himself. He doesn't have to press to make that touchdown pass where he has the team. And I think we're starting to get there as a team, too, and where he doesn't have to carry the team.
You know, when I look at what you've done, especially on the offensive side, and I see your sixth-round pick, Luke Blanco, next to your third-round pick, Brandon Linder, and obviously a young Luke Jokel and a young Austin Pastor. We've talked about 48 starts from your rookie class and that being the most around the NFL this year. Is there any scenario that you knew or thought you might see Blanco starting at center and Linder starting at right guard early this year, or did that just evolve?
No, that was actually something we talked about quite at length. Actually, I think it's still written up on my we had about three or four different combinations through training camp and as to who was going to play where. And you know, Brandon Linder does play center too, and Luke does play guard, so we had about three or four different scenarios going into the Philly week and through training camp as to who we should play at center, who we should play at guard. And we kept coming back to the combination of Blanco and Linder. Unfortunately, Luke got hurt late in the preseason. Wasn't 100%, so he didn't start the first two games. But has really done a nice job. I know I was talking to Tony Buscelli, and we were talking about Luke Blanco, and the number one question in the offseason was who was going to be our center. We went after Alex Mack. We gave him a great offer. We tried hard in free agency to find a guy. And then we had Mike Brewster. We had a lot of different guys playing that position. And every day it was, well, what are the Jaguars going to do at center? What are the Jaguars going to do at center? Who's going to play center? How are they going to cope without a center? And we haven't heard a word about our center position since week three. So
no.
That's a good thing for the organization and the future of this organization, where we don't hear those questions anymore. And when you're not talking about an offensive lineman, that's generally a good thing.
You mentioned Luke Jokel should be a fifth-year senior. Is he getting better? Do you see him week to week now?
Yeah, and keep in mind that this is going to be the completion of his rookie year coming up this week. This is his 16th game. It's going to be his 16th start. And so he worked his butt off in the off season. The left tackle is kind of like I equate it to, you know, Hamza Ahmed, our logistics coordinator, where we travel on 25 away games and everything's great. The buses are on time and the food's there and everything's great. And as soon as the Wi-Fi goes on the plane, everybody wants to shoot him. And you only know when something goes wrong where he's at. And that's the same thing with the left tackle in the league. The left tackle in the league is a situation where it's glorified because you give up a sack, and that's what people look at. And the bottom line is, across the league, it's a very difficult position to play, and they're going to give up sacks. And Luke's actually done a pretty good job here. You know, he went against Dwight Freeney, who's one of the top pass rushers in the league early on in San Diego, held him sackless. I don't think he gave up a sack up until there was a three- or four-game span, and then the last play, the Cincinnati game, he gave up one. And then in Dallas, he gave up one. But he's really doing a good job. It's a difficult position to play, and he's got all the talent in the world, and I think he's gonna be a really good left tackle for us for years to come.
How much better does your whole offensive line get this week, Dave, with Mercedes Lewis back in the lineup?
Well, it's certainly going to help our run game. You know, Mercedes is, if not the best, one of the top run-blocking tight ends in the league. And so that's going to be a nice boost for our run game, which has been doing really well the last 5 weeks. And so I'm anxious to see how that's going to play out.
You know, a lot of questions about him and his future. He's a 30-year-old tight end. Most folks know he got a big deal a few years ago. Do you see him as a building block for the future of this franchise? Is he a guy that you can count on into the future, or does his salary cap number play a part?
It really doesn't play a part for us. You know, we have so much salary cap space that it shouldn't be an issue for us to keep players that we want to keep. So for the most part, you know, he's great in our locker room. He's a good mentor. And this league it's hard enough to find good players. And if you have one, you certainly just don't want to cast them away because they make too much money. There's always ways to figure things out. And but really haven't thought much about his future here until, you know, the end of the season or to the end of his contract.
You know, since we're talking about contracts and salary cap room, I mean, you have, as you mentioned, plenty of salary cap room. From general manager's perspective, I mean, is that an asset? Are you eager to get out there and to use that? Or can that be of a bit of a burden for a football team when you've got to go out and spend it, like the CBA says the teams have to do to a certain level? Can it be both a blessing and a curse?
I wouldn't call it a curse. I think, you know, our vision was always kind of targeting. We wanted to get a core foundation for our franchise of young players, guys that were going to be here for a long period of time. And you do that through the draft. It's hard to do that through free agency. And until we had our quarterback situation resolved, which we believe we do now, now it's time for us to really focus in on, you know, upgrading this team wherever we can and wherever we see fit. And in doing that, unfortunately you're gonna have to spend some money, but you have to spend it anyways or else you're just gonna give it back to the league. So
right, so
I think it's a great asset. I think when you have guys like Jonathan Cyprian or Denard Robinson or Luke Jokel or Blake Bortles 4 years from now, and you have that large cap space available, this is going to allow us to be sustainable for a long period of time, and not just when this thing turns around, which is going to turn around quickly, and you're going to look back and be like, wow, that happened a lot quicker than I thought it did. Then it's going to enable us to pay these guys and be creative with their contracts and their salaries to keep players that we really want to keep around here for a long period of time and not limit us to because of the salary cap.
I guess I should say, too, if you and your staff do what you want to do, you won't have this problem for very long because you're going to have to pay players.
That's right. That's right. That, usually teams that are winning teams and very historically, you know, in the playoffs, they generally don't have the salary cap space. Now, we're in a situation where we can continue to have that because we have so much right now, and it carries forward from year to year. And that's part of the reason why we've carried it forward the last 2 years and kind of have what we call money in the bank. So when it comes time to invest in our own players and reward our own players, that we're going to be able to do that on top of filling some needs through free agency with free agents.
And I want to jump over and ask you about some of your free agent signings. Before I do, though, Dave, real quick, I want to point out to all those folks who are listening right now, there are two big events coming up at the stadium that you're going to want to be a part of. The first is obviously when the Jaguars host the Texans on the 7th of December. It's Military Appreciation Day, and folks, you here in Jacksonville know how tied this community and the military are and how much the Jaguars want to support the military. You don't want to miss that game. And then on the 18th, the Thursday night primetime game here at Everbank Field, the ultimate tailgate party down in Lot TT with live music from J.J. Gray and Mo Fro, the Craft Beer Fest featuring beers from Anheuser-Busch and Bold City and Intuition and all the great local favorites that you know, local food trucks, and of course, the folks from the NFL Network will be there. So make sure that you take the time to take a good hard look at what's going on in the stadium. I know we've been away for almost a month, getting ready to come back here a week from Sunday, and some big things on the docket for all of our season ticket members to enjoy coming up. One more quick thought on your draft class. Towards the end of the ball game in London, Dave, there was a play, and it was called back. It was a turnover, and one of the linebackers for the Cowboys started going back up the Cowboys sideline. And even though I knew the play was going to be blown dead, I was blown away by the speed of Marquise Lee to chase it down from the far side of the field near the goal line. And I said, wow. I mean, there's the speed that you and Gus have talked about and that we've been waiting to see. How long do you think? Can you see something from him in the next 6 weeks? Can Jaguars fans expect to see something from him with his prodigious talent?
I believe so. And if you go back to the Philly game, I think he had 7 catches in the Philly game, came back against Washington and had a couple more catches too in that game. So early on, he was on pace to start, you know, really challenging for, you know, a lot of these rookie receivers are having great production this year. And then he had an unfortunate situation where he pulled a hamstring And then with the emergence of Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson, and then getting Cecil back off of the injury, it wasn't that he wasn't doing well. It was just you can only play so many receivers at a time. And, you know, kind of going with the hot hand and Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns, it was nothing that Marquise did. It was just a tribute to how well those guys were doing, which is a great problem to have for us. And now that the unfortunate situation with Allen Robinson getting injured, now Marquise is going to have to step up. And, you know, we haven't seen anything in practice that says he won't. And so we're looking forward to it. And then I think you're going to see a lot of that speed, and hopefully he has some success early on in these next six games. And if not, you know, I know he's going to do everything in his power. I know he works. He's a very diligent worker. He works hard. It's very important to him. And the offseason is going to be very important not only to him but every one of our rookies. Players generally in the NFL make their biggest jump from their rookie year to their second year. And then there are certain players that takes an additional year. But you've seen it with guys like Denard Robinson, his jump from last year to this year. Jonathan Cyprian's playing some really good football, had a couple mishaps here in the Dallas game, but overall has played really well this year. So those are some things that players, you know, this rookie class is really going to have to devote themselves in the offseason, because they will make a big jump in their play and their style of play, and Marquise will be no different.
You know, Dave, I'm sure a lot of the season ticket members who are on the line for this call this evening, you know, have read and followed what you have mentioned about Denard Robinson, a guy that you saw when he was a freshman, people at Michigan thought so highly of, and obviously now that we've had more than a year to really get to know him. You mentioned in London that you thought that he had a much higher ceiling. What do you think Denard Robinson has to do to hit that ceiling? What does he really have to work on? As we had, you know, last year it was putting weight on and getting bigger. What do you think he needs to do to hit that ceiling?
I think he just needs to get experience, a game experience, and just add to his library of plays. So when he sees a hole, he knows exactly where to hit it and how to hit it in different plays. He's a guy where we said most players take their biggest jump from year one to year two. I still expect him to take a big jump from year two to year three. And that's because, for all intents and purposes, you can almost call this his rookie year. Because he, you know, last year was just learning the position. Now he's getting a significant amount of play time. And then now next year he can have another good offseason, know exactly what to expect, and then go into next year, and now he's got a library of experience where he can draw on in a game situation. And instead of thinking, he can just react. And you're starting to see a little bit more of that right now.
Bob Babich talked today about Aaron Colvin. Take us back to the decision to draft Aaron in the fourth round with that ACL. By the way, for folks who are just listening tonight and may not have heard, we expect to see Aaron Colvin this week, I think, Dave. And yep. So, you know, talk a little bit about what you expect from him, what you saw from him, and overcoming an ACL in less than a year.
Coach Babich, did he say good things about him?
Very good things to say. Yeah. He seems very instinctual.
Yeah, Aaron, so take it back to the Senior Bowl. We had him there for about a day and a half, and loved everything about him, his demeanor, his toughness, his competitiveness, everything that we look for, that we strive for in our players. You notice right away he had that. And then when we got him on the field, he was, he was outstanding in that first day and a half practice. And then we really liked him. And then looking at our grades and our college grades, we had him as rated one of the highest corners in the draft. And some, depending on who you evaluate him, had him as the best corner in the draft, to be quite frank with you. And so when it came down to it and he got hurt, and it was an unfortunate situation for him, fortunate for us that we spent, you know, a day and a half with him at the Senior Bowl and knew everything about him, and got to interview him again at the combine, and just kind of kept him on the radar. And we were always targeting. We knew we had two fourth-round picks, and we were always targeting him with our second fourth-round pick, and fortunate enough for us that he was still there, and now he's with us. And he, too, you know, this will be his first game experience in the NFL. I wouldn't expect, you know, he's going to go through some adversity and some growing pains, and he hasn't played football since last January, but we think that his ceiling is extremely high, and we think he could be a very good player for us for years to come.
You have a bunch of young guys in that secondary. You've mentioned John Cyprian a couple of times. And he's a guy that fans are very familiar with. Take us a little deeper on Demetrius McCray, who's gotten plenty of playing time. Has he impressed you this year? He seems like he's so long and can make plays. Seems like a guy that also has a really high ceiling.
He has impressed me from the day he's come here and the day we drafted him. He doesn't say a whole lot. He just goes about his business. He works extremely hard. He's very diligent, highly competitive. Whatever you ask him to do, if it's a gunner on special teams or cover kicks, he's going to do it to the best of his ability. And he slowly but steady has gotten better from day one. And like Denard, and you know, when you talk about players taking their jump from year one to year two, well, sometimes those small school players, a guy that played at Appalachian State, sometimes it takes him a full 3 years to reach his potential. So you're right. He does have a very high ceiling because, you know, he's a 6'1" plus corner. He's got very long arms. He runs a sub 4.4, all the things you want in a corner. And he's highly competitive. So those are the things where, you know, he, like Denard, just has to get some game experience. And I think he did an incredible job last week against Des Bryant and Dallas and the week before against AJ Green. So the corner's not an easy position to play in the league, and when you have a seventh-round corner like Demetrius McCray and he's competing like he is, that's great for the Jacksonville Jaguars season ticket holders.
Well, obviously, Dwayne Grotz is a guy who fans have gotten to know back there with Cyprian. So is it a challenge for you to put that many young guys out on the field in the same position group?
Yeah, for me, it's not a challenge. For our coaches, it's a big challenge. And you have to understand that, you know, sometimes it limits what you can do, and sometimes you just have to let them play and keep it simple. But there's going to be mistakes, and there's going to be issues with consistency until they really figure out that, you know, every play they have to be on. And we're slowly but surely getting there. And now Aaron Colvin's going to be another one. He's going to be a rookie in there and some of our nickel packages. And I don't know exactly how much he'll play this week, but we'll see some of them.
A couple more questions with Dave Caldwell. Hope all of you out there are enjoying the evening with the Jaguars general manager. Dave, lots of questions about, in particular, about Telvin Smith, who after the Cleveland game was the AFC Defensive Player of the Week. And the question I got the most is, are there more Telvin Smiths out there? Is that the future of the linebacking position in the NFL?
Well, if there's more, we want them.
So, yes, sir.
You know, so that it is. It is a big man's game. And, you know, you have to be able to withstand a pounding and play 16 very physical games. And when we get to the playoff caliber, you're going to be playing 17, 18, 19, you know, possibly 20 games a year. And so you have to have some type of sturdiness to you as a player. But the way the passing game is, the way, you know, some of these offenses are running, you need speed and you need athleticism. So the 6'3", 250-pound linebacker that runs a 4.4 doesn't come around very often. So at times you have to give or take a little bit. Telvin runs a 4.3. He is 6'3". But just a little bit light. Now, he'll grow into his frame. He'll grow into his body and hopefully keep that speed over the next 2 or 3 years while he's gaining some weight. So I think there's always room to have a player like Telvin, at the very least, an excellent nickel linebacker, and will play 40 to 50% of the snaps. But you still want to have some guys like Paul Posluszny that can handle the big boys.
Speaking of the big boys, you spent time and money working on your front line this year. Looking back on it, did you get done what you wanted to get done with that group? Have they reached the level of performance that you expect?
I think they've done a really nice job up front. The addition of Chris Clemens and Red Bryant, along with Ziggy Hood, has really helped us run a rotation of 9 defensive linemen in there. Chris Smith, our rookie, fifth-round pick, has played sparingly in some pass rush situations and done a nice job, as well as Tyson Alualu, who's a fourth-year player who's really playing a good brand of football. So the mindset was to have these guys play where last year Senderek and Roy just played too many plays, and by the end of the season they were worn out. By the end of games they were worn out. So if we can get capable guys in there that could, you know, rotate and they can stay fresh for for four quarters or for 16 games, then that was going to help the production of a guy like Ryan Davis or the production of Cedric Merks, which it has. And it's really helped the defensive line as a whole. I think we were third in sacks before the bye week. Now with the week off, I think we fell a couple spots. But I think we've...
But you're not far off the pace.
No, and I think we've matched or come close to matching our sack total from last year. And considering the way some of our games have gone, usually teams that lead the league in sacks have a very high-powered offense. And their high-powered offense is usually ahead in most games. I know my time in Indianapolis, you know, we had Robert Mathis and Dwight Freeney, but we were always, you know, Peyton Manning too, so we were up 14-21-0, so those guys could just tee off. So it's even more admirable what our defense line has done with as much sack production as they have, knowing that we have not been ahead in many games.
How about a quick thought on special teams before we let you go? Gus said earlier this week that, you know, there have been some big plays that obviously have disappointed him, but overall he kind of likes the direction that they're heading. What are your thoughts on special teams, and what's the most critical thing you need from that group over the final month and a half of the season?
Well, I think special teams is really kind of fallen victim to the way our roster is kind of built right now. And when you have such a youthful roster, like a lot of guys like Telvin Smith, Chris Smith, some of our later round draft picks, Aaron Colvin, Dwayne Gratt, a lot of those guys normally in their first and second year will be playing a lot of special teams, and they would really help our special teams. For us, those guys are starters right now. So they have to be limited on the amount of special teams they play, which takes a toll in terms of the coverage. And so now you're going from guys that should be playing special teams to your backup special teamers are playing special teams. So it's tough, and Coach Mallory has a tough job, but it's done a really nice job on our coverage units. And I think we got our protection units set up right now. So it's just one of those things where we just have to fight through it. And next year, everybody's going to be a year older and a year more experienced, and we're going to have some more veterans on the team. So I don't anticipate it being a problem in the future.
And that brings me really to my final thought, Dave, and it's a question that we got a lot. You know, how patient are you, Dave? How patient is the ownership? People who are listening to this call can hear the patience in your voice. Did you know that there would be bumps in the road like this when you took this job? And is the patience that we're hearing in your voice the result of a well-laid-out plan, or is that just who you are?
Well, my wife would probably tell you that's not who I am. And probably the people around me would probably tell you I'm not very patient. And you know, with this has been very difficult, but but we knew it was going to be very difficult. That's part of the reason why I took the job here in Jacksonville. I knew it was a great challenge, and I knew that that when we turn the corner and we start to look back at what we did here as a team, as an organization, as a community, that there's going to be a great sense of pride for everybody involved, the season ticket holders, the fans, our coaches, our players, and it's going to come, and it's going to come quickly. It's just, you know, that there was going to be adversity early on. You knew you're going to have to build it with young players, and the criticism was going to come regardless, and it's just part of the job, part of the deal. So, you know, take the criticism, learn from the mistakes that we may have made in the first or second year, and continue to grow and continue to build and continue to get better, and the results are going to start to come, and I promise you that.
Dave, thanks so much for connecting with our season ticket members this evening. I know they enjoy your insight, and all of us wish you the best the rest of the season.
Well, they're critical to our success here in Jacksonville, and you know, I was just sitting on a plane ride home with a gentleman from Jacksonville, and I was saying that it is we're very fortunate to have some of the best fans in the country, and they're passionate, they're patient, but they're extremely supportive, and we can't say enough from an organization standpoint on the support that they give us.
Dave, thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of your evening with your family, and we'll see you at the stadium.
Thanks, Brian.
That is Jaguars General Manager Dave Caldwell joining you. Season ticket members, part of the 365 initiative, and it's the way that the Jaguars are connecting with you. And hopefully you appreciate the opportunity as much as Dave appreciates the opportunity to connect with you. So stay tuned to what's going on with Jags 365 and make sure you get all the benefits that are coming to you as a member of Jags 365 and being a season ticket member. I'll remind you again of the two big events that we're really excited about coming to EverBank Field. The first Military Appreciation Day against the Texans, that is Sunday the 7th of December. They've got the group reenlistment, which has become a bit of a staple the last few years at halftime, which is always inspiring. The U.S. Navy Band will perform the national anthem. The Coast Guard will have the helicopter flyover, and obviously lots of high-ranking local Jacksonville military personnel and wounded warriors. It is an emotional day. It is a day that we say thanks to so many members of our community. And I'm biased, but I don't think anybody in the NFL does it as well as the Jaguars do. And then again on the 18th, which is our Thursday primetime game against the Tennessee Titans, the big ultimate tailgate party in Lot TT with J.J. Gray and Mo Fro and the craft beers and the local food trucks and the NFL Network broadcast. Look, it's going to be festive. It's going to be fun. It's going to showcase Jacksonville and all that's good about the National Football League and the Jaguars together with you. So be there for both of those. And I guess we'll just say goodnight by thanking Dave Baldwell again and all of you for being an important part of what's going on with the Jaguars here in North Florida and in the Jacksonville area. So have a great night. If we don't talk to you between now and next Thursday, have a very happy Thanksgiving with you and your friends and your family, and look forward for more from the Jaguars for our season ticket members. Have a great night, everybody.